This is a Boardwalk Audio podcast.
Hello and welcome to Duck Snort Baseball Podcast. I'm Greg Nix.
I'm Waylon McQueen.
We got a jam-packed show today.
Big time jam-packed.
Yeah, joining us in a little bit will be Sean Morash from Off the Bench Baseball, our distribution partners. And Sean did an interview with Hall of Famer Dave Winfield that we're going to have on the show, which is kind of crazy. I mean, we have not yet had, in the history of this show, a Major League Baseball player.
No, we've had minor league players.
We've had minor league players. We've had a lot of baseball writers and people who are very qualified to talk about baseball.
Oh, sure.
But we're starting off our Major League / former Major League roster with a bang with Dave Winfield.
With Dave Winfield.
Pretty crazy.
A Minnesotan.
Is that true?
I think so, right?
I don't know.
I mean, he played for the Twins, obviously.
Yeah. Well, he played for everybody. He played for like 6 or 7 teams.
Yankees, Angels,
Padres.
Did I make up Angels? I might have made up Angels.
I don't know. I don't know. He played for a lot of teams, though. Yeah. So that'll be coming up in the second half of the show. In the first half of the show, we're going to talk about the big trades that happened in the last week over the All-Star break and into the first weekend after the All-Star break. And we're also going to pick our favorite and least favorite Cincinnati Reds of all time. So just before we get into that, as always, we want to thank our, production platform. The words escape me right now, but that is called Boardwalk Audio. Support Boardwalk and Duck Snort. Visit ducksnortpodcast.com. Click the support our artists link. That will take you to Amazon. Shop like you normally would. Duck Snort and Boardwalk get a small percentage. Also, thank you to Off the Bench, but we don't really need to thank them this week because we can thank Sean
live
on air in the second half. I guess let's start with trade talk
some pretty good size trades.
Yeah, things are off and running.
Well,
this
one's a huge trade that everyone saw coming.
The hot stove and like trade deadline are so exciting. Like I'm sure people who listen to the show have realized by now, like, I'm a transaction junkie.
Oh, you
like,
love them.
I love that shit. Like, I love tiny. Today, like, right before we recorded this, the Royals traded for Brian Goodwin. This fifth string Nationals outfielder. And I'm like, oh, interesting, fascinating. How will Goodwin, like, maybe he'll thrive in full-time play. Oh, but this reliever that the Royals traded in single A has an incredible strikeout, right? Like, I just love that shit. So
my favorite thing about, you're way more of a transaction guy than I am, but as a Royals fan, getting, like, the notices for that is like the Royals get Brian Goodwin. Like, it's like every trade has to be hyped. Like,
yeah,
look what the Royals got. And maybe he will be good, but
He was a former top prospect,
yeah.
So there's a chance.
But, you know,
I actually, it's funny, I wrote an article for SoxMachine.com, this White Sox website that I contribute to, that went up today as we're recording this. When it's out, it'll be a couple of days hence. But that was basically arguing that the White Sox should make trades along the lines of this trade that the Royals made, like acquiring sort of major leaguers, people in the majors, like former top prospects,
yeah,
or like blocked players and stuff like that. So I actually really like it from the Royals' perspective.
Well, I don't.
So that'll be it,
like,
for the big trade talk.
It's only gonna. I don't remember the pitcher's name that they traded.
No.
Like, it's only gonna suck if that guy turns out to be like Craig Kimbrell.
Yeah.
Like, that's the only.
But the odds of that, like,
so
a
low.
Single A reliever,
right? Yeah.
Is
that,
like,
but so even if Brian Goodwin's like not that good, it doesn't matter.
Right. So, and odds are he'll be better than whoever the Royals were playing in center field, right? Who are the Royals starting? When I watched the game, they were starting Alcides Escobar in center field.
Oh, yeah. You texted me about that. Man, it's very hard to watch the Royals. So, you know what? I don't know who's playing center for them right now.
On to trades that people actually care about, right? What? So, everybody knows by now, I'm sure, that Manny Machado is with the Dodgers in exchange for one very good prospect and a bunch of very middling prospects,
right,
it seems like. So let's start with that one before we get into the other deals. I mean, it makes just too much sense for the Dodgers to have acquired Manny Machado, right? Like, it did feel even before the like news started rolling in during the All-Star game and stuff that this was probably happening. Like it felt almost foregone to me. It was like the Dodgers have like
taking pictures with Matt Kemp.
Well, but like even like the weeks before that, right? It was the Dodgers lost this extremely great young shortstop. They basically have like a ton of depth around the rest of the diamond. Yeah. And they have like, I don't know, 8 major league quality outfielders or something like that. Like it made a ton of sense to exchange a good outfield prospect for this superstar shortstop.
And it's like the perfect rental scenario.
Yeah, right. They're the like one team that doesn't need Manny Machado going forward because they already have Manny Machado, except his name is Corey Seager.
Right. And so like if you're a Dodger fan, and because everyone knew at this point, no one's going to get like the Dodgers were not going to give up too much for Manny Machado because no team was going to give up too much for Manny Machado because he's a rental. I think every team's too smart for that right now.
Yeah.
So as a Dodgers fan, you know you weren't going to lose a ton. And I lost my train of thought. They weren't going to give up a ton, but it feels like. So it, I don't know. I lost my train of thought. I completely lost my train of thought.
It's all right.
I'm not even distracted by anything. Yeah.
Well, you're distracted by Phillies Padres.
I wasn't even watching that. I didn't even be distracted by anything.
Well, like what I'll say is, it felt like the Orioles' return was still light to me. Like it felt they went for quantity over quality. Like you would rather have 2 good prospects than 1 good prospect and 4. Not good prospects. And yes. Like what sort of, because I like in between when it was breaking during the All-Star game and when it actually came to completion, like 2-ish days, there were rumors about the package. And this guy, Ruiz, I think mm-hmm. is the outfielder's name, was in it the whole time. But then the rest of the package was sort of in flux. And it was like, oh, well, the Orioles might also be getting this good pitching prospect and they might be paying some of Machado's salary.
Oh, right.
And they didn't end up paying any of Machado's salary and they didn't end up getting this good pitching prospect. And it kind of feels like, I don't know if that was actually on the table, but that is just always so disappointing when these billionaire owners are like, no, I'm not paying $8 million for an actually good return. Like let them pay the $8 million, you know?
Yeah, but
especially for the Orioles, like Machado's like the one guy that can, like, they'll probably trade Zach Britton, but he's a free agent after this year and has been hurt. Like they've got maybe they'll trade Adam Jones, but like Machado is the guy where, like, especially comparing it to like the White Sox rebuild, right? It's like not directly comparable to Chris Sale or Jose Quintana or Adam Eaton because all those guys had years of control. But like that's what the White Sox used to jumpstart their rebuild. Right. And it feels like the Orioles missed an opportunity to add more talent to the system, which is like very bleak. And it's just going to be a bleak time for
the
Orioles.
What you're saying, though, is that they should have traded Machado last year or the year before.
Well, maybe. I mean, I could see them. Because Machado is like the one guy that they had, like Machado's a generational superstar that the Orioles did not have since Cal Ripken, basically. Right. I mean, they had some good players.
Brady Anderson.
Yeah, right. But like, you know, there was that Miguel Tejada era and Melvin Mora and like
Rafael Primero.
Yeah. Right. they've had some good players, but not really. Machado is the best since Ripken. Right. And so it makes sense to me, especially because they were good and they did make the playoffs and they finished around 500 last year, for them to like take one more shot where it's like, okay, we've got Chris Davis on this massive contract. Yeah. We've got like Mark Trumbo on this big, basically.
It was easier for the White Sox to trade Sale and Quintana and Eaton because like there was no chance with them.
Well,
is what you're saying. And Machado, there was still a chance of winning because they were good more recently.
Right.
Is that what you're saying?
A little bit.
Yeah.
I think 2 things. One is the White Sox weren't good with those guys, so it was easier to let them go.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
There was no golden age for them to be like,
remember when we made the playoffs with Manny Machado? There's no Sale pitching in game 4.
Right.
Of
exactly.
Division Series.
Yeah. And you compare the Orioles to maybe like the Giants this year, where it's like, either way, there's going to be a rebuild coming. So, like, maybe it's worth trying to have one more good year before the rebuild. Or like the Royals last year.
We see how that turned out.
Right, but you couldn't they would have been terrible this year either way.
Right.
So couldn't really blame them for like trying to take one more shot.
I don't blame the Royals because, I mean, I guess then I think the Royals and Orioles are probably in pretty similar positions. The Orioles are just like a year behind.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I get it. But I like, so the Orioles were going to lose Machado no matter what because they showed like weirdly no interest in trying to re-sign him.
Well, and I don't think he would have re-signed with
I don't
them.
Think so either, but they didn't even try. It seemed like...
Maybe
I remember
they tried.
Reports last year, though, where, like, it doesn't seem like the Orioles are trying to even...
Maybe.
But...
I mean, like, it seemed pretty clear, both him and Harper, it seemed pretty clear...
Heading to free agency.
For, like, years. Yeah. Like, these guys are not interested in a Mike Trout-type extension.
Sure. But it seemed like the Orioles were taking that personally, and they weren't really going to... I mean, obviously, they were going to make him an offer in the offseason. And they still might. But anyway, it feels like getting anything back. This is a classic situation where they didn't get as much as they could have, maybe, but getting anything back from Machado,
right.
They were going to lose Machado.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So this is like a classic rental, just let's get something.
Yeah.
Trade.
And they made the right decision to trade him, and they did get a good prospect back.
Right.
So it is like a little bit of nitpicking, but like, okay, so
but
let's go. Let's talk about these two other trades, right? Because
sure.
They're both good examples of like either end of the spectrum, almost. Like I
right.
feel like the Orioles Dodgers trade falls in the middle of like the Orioles exchanged Machado for an okay return,
right?
I think the Padres exchanged Brad Hand and Adam Simber for an amazing return.
Yeah, they got a great return.
Like they got a top 10 prospect in baseball for two relief pitchers.
Yeah.
And like those relief pitchers, like Simber's under control for like 6 years or something. He's a rookie. Hand for like 2.5 years and has been one of the best relievers in the game. So it's not without value, obviously. And it sets the Indians up, bullpen up for success like in the next couple of years, which I think was probably important to them because they have this young core of Ramirez and Lindor. And then a little bit, yes, less young of Brantley and Kluber.
Right.
But I still think, you know, that's like kind of an overpay. And like it's crazy that essentially the Padres got a better return for in terms of like high end talent for two relievers than the Orioles did for Manny Machado.
It's the team control. I think, it obviously boils down to the fact
right.
that they traded 2 years of Brad
it does.
Hand.
But also like. Theoretically, when you're talking about a player like Machado could be worth more wins in the second half of the season than
right.
Hand and Simber could be over the entirety of their team control.
Yeah, that's totally true.
Like, especially because Simber is an unproven guy. Like, he's basically had a half season in the majors. He could, like, he could be nothing, you know?
Yeah.
Like, relievers are notoriously, like, unreliable in their performance. So
right.
he could be nothing. So... Like, yes, it makes sense in terms of, like, team control and all that. But also, I think it speaks a little bit to a few things. A, the Indians overpaying a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
B, the Padres getting a really great return and jumping on it. And C, the Orioles settling for secondary pieces in their package that did not necessarily add much value.
Right.
And then, so the Mets traded Jurys Familia to the A's. And that package, like, Familia is probably the best remaining reliever on the market. Like, he's a former All-Star.
Sure, yeah.
He does have a little bit of baggage in terms of, like, an assault charge. And he was injured last year. But still, so, you know, top reliever on the market who is a free agent after this year. But the Mets basically, it seems like, dumped him for salary relief. Like, they didn't get shit for him.
Yeah.
At least according to the analyses I've read is, like, you know, two prospects who are ranked like in the teens or 20s
right.
of the A's system. It's like you couldn't get a guy either. You basically couldn't get a guy who like projects as even an average major leaguer.
But who's going to give that up for a half season of Familia?
I mean, every team needs bullpen help, you know?
I just feel like today, like, the trend lately is like you're not like a half season of a reliever is just like is not worth giving up anybody. Like it's a good move for the A's to get a reliever, but it's like who's like I feel like part of the reason the Indians gave up a little more for a reliever is because they're not desperate,
well,
but they're
okay.
in that Cubs zone. Like when they got Chapman of like we got to win. Like, if we got to take advantage of our window
here's a comparable, right? So last year, the White Sox traded Anthony Swarzak, who was basically a fringe major leaguer before 2017 and then had an amazing half season in the first half of 2017. Yeah. And they traded Swarzak for a better prospect than either of the guys that the Mets got back from the A's. And Swarzak did not have nearly the track record and was also a free agent after the year.
I mean,
So I don't know. It just is like, it seems maybe I'm like being overly influenced by like the analysis that I've read.
Yeah.
But like it seems like an example of the Mets being cheap and shitty.
I think it probably is, but I think in the long term, like it, I guess I go back to the other side of like, what else were they weren't like,
should have traded him, but like if that is the package that you're getting and it's still a week and a half until the trade deadline, like that package is still going to be on the table in a week. Like try to get something better.
It might be, but like also if that truly is the best package and the A's are like,
but that's
we can get a different reliever, like not as good as Familia. Like,
but
I
that's
don't know.
Like a package that can be replicated from any team
from
in
any
baseball.
Team. Yeah.
Like it's not unique to the A's that they could give up like a AAA reliever and like a single A third baseman. Like if the, you know, Mariners were interested or if any team that was in contention was interested, they could give up similar prospects.
It just feels like if I'm a Mets fan, I'm not that bummed about it. I get what you're saying. Like, I'm a Mets fan,
I'm bummed about everything
kind of, like, it might be an example of just being cheap or just, like, maybe they also just, like, want to get rid of Familia. Like, it doesn't seem like that big of a bummer. I would be, like, more disappointed as an Indians fan, unless they win the World Series with Brad Hand pitching, you know, than a Mets fan. I'd just be like, yeah, we could have gotten better, but how... I just don't think it would have been that much better. Like, overall span of the
I guess what it is like, if you're an Indians fan, you have a little bit of faith in their front office.
Sure.
Like, that's earned. If you're a Mets fan, you have no faith. And you have no faith in the ownership group. They haven't earned anything. And so this feels like another in a sort of pattern of, like, either money-based decisions or just poorly thought-out player evaluations.
I guess I just feel like, I think you're looking at the trade through those Mets poor ownership glasses.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I think it deserves to be looked at in that way.
I think if a team like the Cardinals or the Giants pull this, the Giants are weird, but like the Cardinals or like a team that we think is run well.
I would have more faith
in
it, probably.
Like, even if it's the same package, you'd have more. So
that's probably true. It's contextual.
So
I think
the Mets have tainted. I get it. Yeah, I'm not completely disagreeing with you. I'm just saying that to me, it doesn't strike me as like as shitty. Other than the fact that it's the Mets doing another shitty thing, but I think sometimes it's like.
Yeah. No, I see what you're saying. I think it would have been questionable, like a questionable talent play. If any team made that deal.
Sure,
but I think the two things are, it's the Mets, and so they have not earned any benefit of the doubt, and it was a week and a half before the trade deadline.
That's the weirdest thing to me is that you're right, that package was there on the 30th.
Yeah, right, yeah. Exactly. Kind of similar to the package that the Royals got for Kelvin Herrera. It was like, that's a mid-June deal, and like there's not a prospect here.
That was weirder to me.
But like,
I have no faith in...
But I think it's a very similar deal.
Or date more.
I think it's a very similar deal in very similar circumstances.
Yeah, I get it. I see that.
So that's our trade talk. There will be a ton more, obviously, over the
next week.
We'll have to... I wonder... I'm just looking at our calendar right now, and like the 31st is the day that the podcast comes out. It's a Tuesday.
Yeah.
I wonder if we should... record Tuesday night or something and release it on Wednesday.
Going to a baseball game.
Oh, that's right. We'll figure it out. I would agree
with you because it would be. I was just thinking about that. I was like, man, the next time we're scheduled to record is the 29th or 30th.
We could maybe.
So we're going to be way behind.
Yeah. Well, we'll talk about it off air. Yeah, we'll figure it out.
Good thing we had this production meeting on air. Should we move to the Reds, all time Cincinnati Reds?
Yeah, let's do it.
So the Reds, Cincinnati Reds, oldest franchise in Major League Baseball.
The Red Stockings.
1876, I believe.
Something like that.
No, 1869.
I do want to, before we get into best player or favorite player, least favorite player, I want to say favorite mascot. Reds. Mr. Redlegs?
Over Mr. Met?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Mr. Redlegs got a big mustache.
Oh, that's true. What about the Brewer?
Bernie the Brewer?
Bernie the Brewer.
Bernie's great. I'll take baseball head over human head.
I think I mentioned this before, but I was at the Royals game when their mascot Slugger was introduced.
Oh, yeah? He's like a lion, right?
He's a lion because king of the jungle.
King of the jungle. But Royal.
But he, at the game, they started the game with a news report that a lion had escaped from the Kansas City Zoo, like on the big screen. And like,
did people know that the mascot was being announced or no?
I didn't. I don't know like what the consensus in the stadium was, but like you could also tell that it was like produced.
Fake,
not
yeah.
Because obviously, and then like maybe the first one people were like, what? And then by the second one, they're like, he was seen headed towards Coffin Stadium. And you're like, okay,
this is a gimmick.
Yeah. But then,
except for one person who's like flipping the fuck out. It's like, everybody leave. Go.
This is before like the internet was popular. But then like, I think
it was when the internet was still a hipster thing.
Yeah. It's like, yeah, it was real underground. Because it's before Wi-Fi. So, and then like,
boo,
the
that was the terrible.
It's great. So before the 7th inning stretch, he appeared at the top of the Giants Royals scoreboard, and the crowd, like, they're just like, he's at Coffin Stadium, and, you know, and then the Royals have a giant, like, does everyone know about it, right? Does everyone know about this? If you watch the 2015 All-Star game or whatever year, you certainly know about it.
The big scoreboard with the crown and stuff, yeah.
But he was, and then like there was a puff of smoke and he was at the top and the crowd lost
it.
Anyway, that was a digression. We can get to the Cincinnati Reds.
Cincinnati Reds. So Mr. Redlegs, awesome.
He is great, yeah.
Favorite, should we do least favorite or favorite first?
Let's go
back and forth.
I like starting with the negative and ending with the positive.
Yeah. All right, who's your least favorite Red of all time?
This is a no-brainer. He's my least favorite player in Major League Baseball currently.
Wow.
Mike Lorenzen. Mike, right?
Yeah, pitcher.
Oh, I hate him.
Huh? I have never heard anybody have any feelings
Here's
on him.
Here's why.
He's like the guy who hit like a pinch hit home run, right?
Yeah.
The pitcher?
Yeah. He's a great hitter.
Okay. I'm just trying to place him because I really
don't.
Which
makes it worse.
No.
So normally I don't do this, but he has one of the most punchable faces I've ever seen. Like very few people do and he's not unattractive. So I'm not making fun of his attractiveness.
Right.
Something about the way he looks and when he comes out in a Reds uniform, like I seethe when the Cubs are playing the Reds and he comes in. Like, I don't even know if he's particularly good or bad against the Cubs. I don't like everything about the way he carries himself on the mound, looks on the mound. Like, something about him drives me nuts. And I think he does hit well against the Cubs. I don't like him.
I'm looking at him. He looks a little bit like Tim Lincecum to me. Do you think Tim Lincecum has a punchable face?
No, I love Tim Lincecum's face.
So maybe it's more about like energy or
there's
something.
There's something about his
You know
energy?
Who else
there's
he looks like is a comedian that we know to me named Brad Evans.
Brad Evans?
Yeah.
Oh, I don't think he looks like Brad. No. No way.
Okay.
Brad Evans.
Anyway, that inside.
Brad Evans does not have a punchable
face.
I'll say that. I don't think he looks like Brad, but also... Brad, I know you listen. you do not have a principal face. I don't know. Something about him, man. Like it's like the opposite of love
Damn.
At first sight. You know,
look
like
at this picture of him, though. He looks like jacked Lincecum.
Oh, he doesn't have the long hair anymore.
Yeah.
So, you know, like, you know, when you see like a girl and you're just like instantly like, even if you don't know anything about her, you're kind of like, I like her.
Yeah, sure.
This is the opposite. Like, as soon as I saw him. If he got traded to the Cubs or Royals, like, it would be very difficult for me.
Interesting.
I don't know what it is. It's an indefinable quality.
Okay.
But he's my least favorite Red. He's my least favorite player in baseball. I guess least favorite player in baseball, domestic abuse or drug driving category.
Yeah.
Non-actual terrible human category. So it's a pure baseball dislike.
Yeah. That's fascinating. Yeah. I mean, I do know what you mean about, everybody knows those sort of punchable face people where they're just like something about
and it's
you.
It's obviously subjective. I'd love to hear, what I'd love to hear if on Twitter, like if anybody has like an irrational
dislike,
I don't like this
of players.
Player. I don't like this player just because something about their overall aura or quality.
Yeah. I'm trying to think. I must have guys like that, but like nothing is necessarily like popping to mind right now.
Me neither. I think it happens so rarely. It's not a thing I usually have with like any athlete or person.
Yeah.
But with him, it really is.
I guess maybe that guy Hunter Strickland on the Giants.
Sure. But he has.
He seems like that. I think there's more evidence that he's like a jerk than.
Yeah.
Maybe
that's
Mike
a good
Lorenzo.
One. Though. Hunter Strickland does drive me crazy. All right, what's your least favorite, Red? Who is your least favorite?
I went with a perhaps controversial pick of Hall of Famer Joe Morgan.
Oh, I thought about him, but that's mostly I don't.
Yeah,
go ahead.
I mean, I don't remember him playing. He retired 2 years before I was born, but so it is based on sort of his broadcasting career. But I feel like that's valid because so much of being a color commentator is based on like your playing days and your playing history. So I've like heard him talk about the big red machine to no end, you know?
Right.
And I think I'm sure a lot of people listening to this podcast know that Joe Morgan is a terrible announcer.
Sure.
So I don't necessarily need to, I think, explain it in detail besides that he's just a very like stuck in the past kind of guy.
I almost chose Harold Reynolds for least favorite Mariner for the same reason.
Very similar. And like, it is kind of crazy that he was such a great player. Like,
he was
2-time MVP,
so
Hall of Famer. So that it's like almost a shame to feel kind of that he sucks as a person. But
he was,
I don't know, those,
like,
those broadcasts, especially by the end, like I didn't mind him when I was a kid, and maybe that was like kids' ignorance. Like, and I really like John
Harold
Miller.
Reynolds. Yeah. Oh, yeah. John Miller was.
John Miller's
John
a great,
Miller is great
play-by-play guy. Still is. Yeah. And so it's crazy how bad those broadcasts were. And I have to like lay it just really at the feet of Joe Morgan since I like John Miller so much.
And you also are a huge Michael Schur fan.
That's true. And so fire Joe Morgan. Read Fire Joe Morgan like constantly when I was in high school and college. And it really kind of shaped the way I look at baseball in many ways.
I think Fire Joe Morgan was very key in getting me on board with like analytics and, and sarometrics and advanced stats.
Yeah.
You know, all this stuff.
And like all the guys that they sort of took the piss out of. I like Steve. What's the former Mets GM? I remember them. Steve Miller? No, Steve something.
Yeah, I know you're talking about.
He was a frequent target. Jim Bowden. Yeah.
Yeah.
So all those guys.
That
but
really
Joe Morgan is obviously like the singular example.
I feel like Joe Morgan as a player is a rare example of someone who feels like he would have been unappreciated in his time because he was like an advanced stats guy. Or I mean, he wasn't, the way his style of play turned out to be a good advanced stats style of play.
Because he walked a lot.
Was.
But he also, I mean, you know, stole 60 bases every year and hit 320. Like, I'm sure that he was appreciated.
But his war, I mean, he had 4 seasons with above 9 war, including an 11 war season and another 8.6 war season.
Yeah.
He was like super good.
Legendary player.
Terrible broadcaster. All right. So favorite Red. So of all time, because I like to do with the old teams of all time.
Sure.
Johnny Bench is so good.
Okay.
The Reds have a weird history because I like baseball history, but kind of like before the 70s, there aren't like a lot of standout great Reds.
Yeah.
Like, you don't have your, like, Bob Feller for the Indians or, like, your Walter Johnson for the Senators or even, like, your Harmon Killebrew for the Twins.
Right.
The Reds just almost don't. They had good players and they have Hall of Famers, like Ray Chapman and, like, Bid McPhee, who's
way old
like school.
But not, like, defining MLB figures.
And Shoeless Joe was really great for the Reds, but he's more known for the White Sox. But anyway, Johnny Bench, I always loved him growing up. I really like the Big Red Machine.
Noodles Han? That's a guy that
I think,
I'm looking.
Is, like, Steffi McGinnis one, or is that, like, a different?
I don't know.
Team?
I'm just looking at the Reds, like, top war top players war. Ever.
Ted Kluziski, like, he always wore his, like, he was like, he's not a Hall of Famer, but he always wore his like sleeves cut off.
Mm-hmm.
And he was like a big muscler guy for the day. I'm sure he's like the size of like
you or I.
Now. But I really like the Big Red Machine team as like a team. Like that's one that I like a lot of the players. But my favorite overall Red of all time is Joey Votto, which might seem blasphemous for Cubs fans. I don't feel like Cubs fans hate him the way they hate Ryan Braun, but Joey Votto is so funny. We've talked about it before. He's so weird. Mm-hmm. He's really good. It's cool that he's fine playing in Cincinnati. Like, that's the defining quality. Like, it doesn't ever seem like he's demanded. He could so easily have been like, I got to get out of Cincinnati.
Yeah, well, he signed that huge extension like when they were good.
Right. And but he has, I never heard him grumble about it.
Yeah.
Maybe he does in the Cincinnati Star or whatever their newspaper is. But
yeah. No, I think he's sort of a he doesn't seem like the kind of
but
guy
he's
who.
He's so weird, too.
Like he's a very strange
dude.
He
throws balls out of Wrigley. He'll like fake throwing a ball to the fans and then throw it out of the stadium in Wrigley Field.
He's got crazy eyes.
Yeah.
You know, he's got like an intensity about him, but like a fun intensity as a fan.
It's like Beltre. I think Beltre has that too. Although lately I think he's only silly. But for a while he could be super intense. I really like Joey Votto. I can't remember if we talked about it, but watch the Jerry Seinfeld, David Letterman Netflix interview, and they have a great Joey Votto story.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, we may have talked about
maybe
this.
Maybe off the podcast or something.
Yeah.
It's not worth me recapping, but David Letterman and Jerry Seinfeld both had almost the exact same experience with Joey Votto at separate times, and then Joey Votto responded to that interview in a very great way, and I just am going to task everyone with looking it up.
Yeah, that's great. I'll definitely look it up. That's funny. I mean, I have three players written down as sort of like my favorite Reds, and kind of was like trying to figure out who I was going to pick, and I think I won't pick Votto just for the sake of talking about somebody else, I do love Votto. I mean, I love sort of he's pretty singular, even as like a slugging first baseman, of like, you know, best batting eye in baseball. Like often every year walks more than he strikes out. Sort of has taken a lot of shit for that, but has not changed that. You know, there was several years where people were like, he needs to be swinging more, he needs to be driving in more runs, but you know, has been among the most valuable players over the last 10 years, with the exception of maybe one season. And just consistent, you know, a guy who he's what, 34, 35 now, and has not slowed down, which is pretty rare today, like kind of a throwback to sort of teenage years of my teenage years following baseball, except hopefully without the steroids, you know. And like then you add the personality, that he's best friends with Shinsu Chu, the same nickname for each other, that he gave Zach Cozart a goat, like all this crazy stuff that he's fantastic. So the other two guys that I talked about, or that I thought about, I'll start with the one who I'm not going to choose first, which is Jose Rijo.
Okay.
And I just love Jose Rijo's story of like being, he was, I believe, the World Series MVP in 1990.
He
was like the ace of this Reds team for several years. And then he was out of baseball for like 6 years, maybe, from injuries. I should probably have like...
Keep talking about it. I'll look it up while you're talking.
Yeah.
He's a nasty boy, though, right? Wasn't he?
Well, no, he was a starter.
He wasn't
though.
In the bullpen.
The bullpen that was were nasty that boys? Was like Rob Dibble and
Norm
Mitch
Charlton
Williams. Was he on that team? Norm Charlton.
He was out of baseball from 96, 97, 98, 99, and 2000.
Yeah.
Was Rijo.
I think he's one of. I just read an article recently. I think because what's his name just came back with three Tommy John surgeries, the reliever who used to pitch for the Braves and now is
Venters.
On the Rays. Yeah, Johnny Venters. And so he was the first confirmed, like, this guy has definitely had three Tommy John surgeries.
Yeah.
But Rijo may have also. He definitely had two, and he had another elbow surgery, but it is not, like, public knowledge what that elbow surgery was. But, yeah, he missed five full seasons. Like, everybody thought he was done, and then he came back and had a very good year pitching for the Reds out of the bullpen.
Yeah, that's
for part of the year.
Super admirable.
So I think that's pretty cool. I always love great stories like that.
He was the World Series MVP in 1990. Nice.
That was a good pull by me.
Yeah.
That was a Waylon style pull.
Yeah,
that's
that
not
was.
The kind of
that's
thing
really
that
good.
I usually know. Anyway, the guy who I am actually going to pick is Barry Larkin. I think there's lots of reasons to love Barry Larkin. I mean, the best shortstop of his generation. For sure. Hall of Famer, one team for his entire career, so he's like indelibly Reds,
right?
To me,
did you say MVP?
That's right, MVP.
96, I think
95. Strike shortened year.
Oh, that's right.
And like I think speaking of sort of advanced stats kind of guys, like maybe another guy who was slightly underappreciated during his time because he was a big on-base percentage guy. Mm-hmm. He did hit for good average, but he was not necessarily like a 200 hits kind of a guy.
Right.
He wasn't a slugger. Part, he was not a 20, 30 yeah. home run kind
he
of a guy.
That one, didn't he have one year where he hit like almost 30 or over 30?
Yeah, 96
runs?
He hit yeah. 33.
Yeah.
But, you know, he stole bases, but generally not in a league-leading kind of a way. Like, just solid all-around dude, yeah. like, player. Who was with the Reds for good and bad years. I like that he was an all-star in his last year when he was 40. He, like, had a good year after yeah. being bad for a few years. So I just think, like, when I think of Reds, even more than Joey Votto, I think of Barry Larkin.
I do, too, and I thought about him, too. And I was thinking when I was growing up, I definitely underappreciate him because I feel like if you would have asked me what I felt about Barry Larkin when I was in the 90s, like late 90s when I was a teenager, I would have just been like, yeah, I don't have really, you know what I mean? Like, I felt indifferent about him. And he's right. definitely someone to look back on and be like, man, like, he was really good. He was really good for Cincinnati because I think it's always good for teams to have those career guys.
Yeah.
And it's rarer. It was even rarer in the 90s. Like that
yeah,
was,
especially for a team like Cincinnati, like
exactly.
a small market team.
Yeah.
And he made it through the, like, Marge Schott years and all that. Yeah. Which
she should have been our least favorite Red.
Well, I thought about her, yeah. but, like, I felt like I've picked
non-players.
Too many yeah. non-players, and I still yeah. sort of did, but at least Joe Morgan was a player. You
That's
know?
True.
But I did yeah. think about her.
Yeah.
But yeah, the Reds have an interesting history for sure,
yeah.
and a lot of great players to choose from. I bet if we were 10 years older even, our picks would have been completely different because we would probably have memories of the Big Red Machine.
It would have been like Rob Dibble or Chris Sabo. I always did like Chris Sabo. He wasn't
just
because
he wore glasses.
Oh, you said
because he like.
I was
nerds.
Thinking the Nasty Boys team, but the
well,
Big
Nasty
Red
Boys.
Machine. Yeah,
but like I'm like you know maybe having memories of like Davey Concepcion or Ken Griffey in
oh,
his
sure.
prime or something
George
like that.
George Foster.
Yeah, my Lou Brock. No, that was Cardinals.
No, he's the Cardinals. It was like Geronimo Baroa was on that team.
You're right. Yeah.
Pete Rose, of course.
Yes, Pete Rose.
Tony
yeah.
Perez was yeah. on that team.
So I don't know. Maybe that would be different. But anyway. Yeah, just a fun team to talk about.
Yeah.
Well, we are about to talk to Sean from Off the Bench. So let's go to break really quick. And when we come back, he'll be on the phone with us. All right. Welcome back to Duck Snort. On the line with us, we have one of the co-founders and editors-in-chief of OffTheBenchBaseball.com, our distribution partner, all-around great guy, Sean Morash. Sean, thanks for talking with us.
Hey, absolutely. Thanks for having me on, guys.
So you got to talk to Hall of Famer Dave Winfield.
Yeah, a bona fide Hall of Famer. How did that come about?
So Off the Bench gets all sorts of random emails all the time. You know, from your Arabian Prince to some guy trying to sell you a book to maybe some video games. And it's, you know, one of them was have a chance to chat with Hall of Famer Dave Winfield. And so we're like, yeah, we are very interested in that. And, you know, it's some PR firm. And so they said, you know, all right, we'll get back to you. And then they wanted Max to go to some hotel in D.C. and film him. And Max is like, it's the middle of the work day. Like, I'm not, you know, what am I going to film on my iPhone? You know, can we just do a phone interview? So, you know, come to find out, all right, that works well. And, you know, I wasn't convinced that it was actually going to be Dave Winfield until I got on the phone with him. so it was kind of a random internet thing. Yeah.
That's like maybe the craziest or most unlikely scenario for how that came about that I could think of, just him emailing you to say I'll talk to you.
Yeah, cold email. That's that's pretty wild.
Yeah, so the, you know, the kind of cold interview of it was that it was actually a campaign for a cancer awareness, and Dave Winfield was lending his name and his time to that cause, which is really close to him, and it actually is what wound up killing Don Baylor. And so Don Baylor Jr. was on the line to kind of talk about kind of the impact that this type of cancer has had on their life and this campaign, which they're running and kind of raise more awareness, I guess, is the simplest way.
Well, so I think let's just go right into that interview, and then after we listen to it, we'll come back, and you have a couple more questions/talking points. So here is Sean's interview with Dave Winfield and Don Baylor Jr.
It's funny. I don't think of myself as a typical blogger or anything like that. I used to play. And so I don't typically like to have these interviews be particularly rigid. So, it, you know, the more kind of free-flowing conversation we can have, the better.
So let me ask you a question along those lines. While we do the interview, how do you do it? Do you tape it and then transcribe it? How do you do these things?
Yeah, I typically record things because I'm not very good at keeping notes. And so I'll go back and write it up and you know, pretty much keep a transcript version of it. If there's some stuff, you know, that maybe the conversation gets a little awkward, you know, anything like that, we'll keep that out of there. I'm not planning on having anything get awkward, but that's the game plan. All right, so I guess, you know, the first question we get to is, you guys are here for the multiple myeloma. It's, you know, the excuse that I get to chat with you about. So we definitely need to discuss that, how it's affected both of your lives and kind of the effort that's underway with this campaign.
Can I start for a second, Don? First of all, during the All-Star game, normally a lot of things are just totally upbeat and sports related. But it's also a good time to kick off a campaign, and this happens to be about a pretty tough disease, multiple myeloma, you know, which is an incurable blood cancer. This is a time we have the platform to launch the Myeloma MVP campaign, and we appreciate just being able to talk to you a little bit about it.
Yeah, that's right. And, you know, it's really interesting. The first time I ever met Dave was at the 1979 All-Star Game in Seattle. Actually, I think it was July 16th, 1979 is that.
Wow.
And so, you know, Dave's been, you know, part of my life for a long time. Obviously, he was part of my dad's life. And, you know, this disease, incurable blood cancer, is a really tough one. We talk a lot about, you know, having a plan, you know, being aggressive, being proactive with your oncologist and your caregiver so that you can make the best strategy, you know, for you and your family.
Yeah, and actually when we talk about it's Myeloma MVP campaign, the MVP stands for most valuable plan, and essentially, you know, one of the components of this campaign, you can go online to myelomaexplained.com. And you can see all kinds of this questionnaire so you can develop the best strategy to work not only with your family and your time, but your oncologist, caregiver, and that type of thing. So, you know, I mean, we appreciate that Amgen, you know, has put this campaign together. But again, when you go online, you can develop a strategy, and they've found that it helps lengthen a person's life, just how they have a plan to attack this insidious disease.
Are you related at all to the Stand Up to Cancer initiative, or is that something, you know, obviously that's separate, but you want to leverage as much kind of publicity as you can? Are the two efforts in parallel at all, or are they related?
Yeah, it's not, you know, just... one of the primary things Stand Up to Cancer, but obviously it is under that umbrella of cancer. And this is a unique kind of cancer. It doesn't maybe affect as many I can't even go into how many, but you're definitely hundreds of thousands of people have this multiple myeloma. A lot of people don't know they have it, and which makes it pretty tough to sometimes combat sometimes.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, a couple of other things, you know, one is, you know, it tends to hit African-Americans a little bit more than other racial ethnic groups. And also it seems to have touched the baseball family a little bit more than others. And so that's certainly one of the reasons why we're partnering with Amgen to really raise awareness about this disease that not a lot of people know about. When I didn't know anything about it. But it is something obviously that has, you know, shaped our lives, and we want others who may be suffering with this disease to know that they're not alone.
So, Don, you mentioned the 1979 All-Star Game. Rachel was gracious enough to share a pretty awesome baseball card, or a picture of a baseball card that had the two of you were the RBI leaders for 1979. Was that when your friendship kicked off, or did it go back a little bit further than that?
Yeah, actually around that time, because I was in the National League, Don was in the American League, but you look at people who were formidable and who could produce, and then I knew that Don was doing things in the community. I mean, he was very active in the community with some other outreach, which is things that I had done. So when we got together, we kind of hit it off. And then a few years later, we played on the same team. And again, you know, against opposition, we're formidable competitors. And then later on, I mean, he was one of the groomsmen in my wedding. We did some things together, and I just respected the heck out of him. And I think he felt the same way about me.
Yeah, that's one of the things Justin Verlander said last night, was that he was excited to meet some of the new guys and some of the other guys from around the league. I thought that was pretty fun.
Yes.
So, you know, along those lines, I guess the thing I miss the most about playing ball is kind of the clubhouse and the being in the dugout and, you know, the friendships that you make that way. Have you been able to maintain a lot of those friendships, you know, over the years, and is that the thing you miss the most, or is there something else?
Yeah, actually, I was talking about that on TV with a friend, that when you finish the game, you miss the camaraderie and the joking, and you could be 40-plus years old, but you're a kid when you're playing. It's a game that you're playing out there. But, you miss the camaraderie, you miss the competition, and things of that nature, but I've kept them pretty close because I work with I'm an advisor to the Players Association, Baseball Players Association, so I see all the guys all the time, know them well, pull for them. So I don't pull for a particular team, although I played for six of them. I pull for all of them, that they have a good, healthy, safe, lengthy career.
That was kind of the one prickly question I had on my mind was your relationship or the role that you play with the Players Association. There's been some talk, maybe some murmurs of some unrest, you know, kind of between the players and the league.
What's new?
Yeah, it seems more prickly than the last 15, 20 years. So I was curious if you had, you know, kind of where you – what the big initiatives might be over the next couple of years and kind of where the players are coming from?
You know, actually, Tony Clark, the head of the Players Association, has his press conference today, so I'll let him go into
all right, fair enough.
Like that. I won't get ahead of over my skis.
Don, did you ever play?
Not professionally.
No, but maybe in high school or something?
High school, a little bit of college.
Okay.
But, I was real fortunate that my dad included me in almost everything. Clubhouse, dugout, bat boy, you know, to the extent that he could, you know. And so I was lucky to be able to have somewhat of a front row seat to some of these things. That was, you know, just in terms of being a dad, you know, including your children and kind of your workplace. And that was, you know, it was an odd workplace, but it was still his work, and he was, you know, he was taking care of me the best he could. So,
yeah, absolutely. A good buddy of mine's uncle was Tony DeFelice, or maybe I have the first name wrong. He was DeFelice. He was a catcher for 10 years in the pros, and it's kind of a similar. Just kind of show up and hang out in the clubhouse a little bit. And so I guess I had a couple more, especially related to Dave. I was doing some homework on you and found that kind of multiple sports and even within baseball, multiple roles. The curious thing was the Vikings drafted you in the 17th round. Did you remember it was the 17th round?
Well, it's not so much the round, but it was like they drafted me and I didn't really play in college or high school. I think this guy could play. I was drafted. So baseball, I knew was going to happen. Basketball, I knew was going to happen. And football, they threw in there. They said, you can catch some passes from Fran Tarkenton back in the day. I don't think so. They can play baseball.
So they did call you?
We talked, but... You know, I mean, they grabbed a Minnesota product, a good athlete from there. It was good business, good PR for them, of course. But, you know, 6'6", 235, 240, could run, good hands.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I was too smart to play that football. So let me get 22 years in baseball.
Yes, sir. Absolutely.
Can't without play. Any broken bone. Yeah.
You pitched too, right? So, Shohei Ohtani is doing his... or was doing his amazing, kind of act. And there's a couple of guys in the minors who are trying to do the same thing, the two-way players. From your perspective, how difficult is that?
Very, very.
Yeah.
It's tough to succeed in one element, hitting, pitching, whatever the case may be. I mean, you like to see that. It would have been interesting to try that. I always had hoped in my career that I could kind of mop up a game one time, and in a blowout, or just so I could have a photograph on the wall of me pitching, bringing it, striking out somebody. Never happened. But it was interesting. In college, can you believe they only let me hit one year, my senior year? And then I go to the big leagues, and that's all I do. So all I can tell you, it was a tough transition. It's just part of baseball. I love the game, and it worked out okay. Things worked out.
Yeah. Did you ever hear that story where Charlie Blackman showed up? He was a pitcher in college, and then he showed up to a summer league and pretended he was an outfielder. And kind of the rest is history. Now he's on the Rockies, the center fielder for the Rockies.
Yeah, I heard a little bit about that. Never talked to him about it, but things happen. It's just like they Shohei Ohtani, they didn't know which way that he would go. The difficult part is guys get, as a pitcher, you're almost assuredly going to be injured during your career. But especially when they're telling people to throw 100 miles per hour, which he was reaching that velocity. And it pushes the human performance. You know, anything else, hitting, running, you'll last longer.
Dave, they're telling them to throw 100 miles an hour?
They like people to do that. That's what they scout. They have velocity schools and teaching kids, and all those orthopedic surgeons are salivating. All right. Thank you. Not good.
I was just thinking, I tried to tell myself to throw 90 miles an hour, and it never quite worked out.
No, that's old school, man.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much, guys. I think that's the end of my time. So.
Okay, listen, Ray, finish up with myelomaexplained.com. In fact, when you get off of this phone, why don't you go to the website and check it out?
Okay, absolutely.
Cool stuff. Great interview with Dave Winfield and Sean Morash. And we are back on the phone with Sean. Sean, how'd you feel about it?
Yeah, so I was pretty nervous, actually. Dave kind of has this way of taking control of the conversation right from the outset. He didn't jump down my throat or anything, but he was very much in control and wasn't going to let me ask him any crazy questions. And so I got a little nervous, talking to a Hall of Famer, even if it's just on the phone, I was a little intimidated by the guy. And they only gave me 15 minutes. And so I actually looked down at my phone right towards the end and I realized I was out of time. So I didn't get a chance to ask him kind of the most important set of questions that I had. So I was hoping, you guys could ask the questions or could answer the questions and, maybe you want to pretend you're Dave Winfield and,
Yeah, I mean, that makes sense.
Yeah, like, help me complete.
I think Greg and I combined are Dave Winfield in a lot of different ways. So
yeah, very Dave Winfield-esque, certainly in our baseball talent, in our life experience. Jeez,
physical size.
Yeah. No, this will be fun. So yeah, give us the questions that you did not ask Dave Winfield but wish you had.
Yeah, so these are off the benches all important questions. Every time I get a chance to interview a minor leaguer, I tend to ask them, you know, 10 kind of rapid fire, you know, one after the other type of questions. And the only rule is that you have to answer. And, you know, a lot of times that makes people nervous, but you never, it's not going to be anything crazy, but, you know, I guess as soon as you can, Greg, we're going to start with you. And, you know, keep in mind you're Dave Winfield. So, and you're, what are you? I think you're 66 years old. You might be, you're approaching 70. But do you think you could hit a home run in the Home Run Derby if you played today?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, as a 66-year-old Hall of Famer, like, especially, I guess it depends where the Home Run Derby is. If you move those fences in a little bit, I'm going to go with 100% yes. But if you give me enough cracks at it, I bet I could get one over the wall. Maybe not take down Bryce Harper or anything, but get one over the wall.
Waylon, Dave, do you have a favorite kind of grass?
This is going to sound crazy, but since I grew up in the age of AstroTurf, you know, we learned how to hit on turf. And so it's terrible on the knees, but it didn't hurt my career. And I think that you can take advantage of the turf a little more. So I'm going to, and, you know, playing in the Kingdome, not the Kingdome, I'm sorry, the Homer Dome, Metro Dome, I got used to turf. I'm going to say turf.
I'm not sure that's the kind of grass.
It's a kind of grass. Dave Winfield says it's a kind of grass.
Don't you give that kind of sass to Dave Winfield.
Okay, what's the best pizza in the world?
Best pizza in the world, that pizza up in the Bronx when I played for the Yankees. Give me a pepperoni pizza thin crust from right by Yankee Stadium.
All right. Do you believe in ghosts?
No, Dave Winfield does not believe in ghosts. No way. Because Dave Winfield hitting is scarier than any ghost. Also, Dave Winfield talks to the third person. No.
There's a minor leaguer in the Angels system who grew up in a haunted house. And I happened to ask him that question, and it was hilarious. You know, it was 20 minutes of ghost stories. So if you could name one person, if you could name a cat after one person in your baseball life, who would it be and why?
I mean, it's got to be Kirby Puckett, right? Kirby's a beautiful name for a cat, a beautiful hitter, beautiful player, beautiful man. What more do you want?
Good cat name. Do you recycle?
No. Next question.
Favorite candle scent?
Just a summer breeze. Reminds me of my days barnstorming in the minors.
Fun fact about Dave Winfield, he spent like a month in the minors.
Let's go say,
maybe even less than that.
I was just going to look up to see if he
reminds
even
me
in
of
the
that. Reminds me of that month I spent in the minors. Best month of my life.
Title of your autobiography?
Mr. May and Beyond.
That's good, but you got to go, How to Win in the Field by Dave Winfield.
Oh, yeah, that's
that
way better. That's way better.
What is How to Win in the Field? What is the...
Yeah, How to Win in the Field, the Dave Winfield story.
Oh, yeah, okay.
It was terrible. That was exactly the right reaction.
I forgot you were Dave Winfield.
Yeah.
All right, that's all I got. Those are all important questions.
Those are great questions, and I think we really got inside his head. I'm going to be honest.
I really am super bummed that you didn't get a chance to ask Dave Winfield those questions.
Yeah, those would have been really fun, or fun cap to the interview. Maybe next time.
Well, it was a pretty fun interview regardless, but it's funny because I tend to write down questions before, and I was so excited to ask him those questions that I wrote those down first. And I can't start the interview with that like nonsense. You know, you have to finish the interview with the nonsense. And so I didn't circle back on my notes.
Right, yeah, you have to start serious. Well, you know, we had fun answering them, so hopefully that filled your need to ask Dave Winfield those questions. I don't know.
Well, it'll now be my life goal to find out if he actually believes in ghosts.
We'll tweet at him or something. Well, Sean, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us. Thank you for letting us share the interview you had with Dave and Don. Obviously, everybody, you know, do what you can to support the causes that they mentioned. That's actually it for this episode of Duck Snort. So thank you to Sean and Off the Bench for their constant help. Thank you to Boardwalk Audio for their help as well. Joe, our producer and editor, Moonbounce for the music. Find us on Twitter @DuckSnort pod. Visit us, ducksnortpodcast.com. That'll be it. We'll talk to you guys next week. Thank you so much for listening.
This has been a Boardwalk Audio podcast. For more information and shows, visit boardwalkaudio.com. Don't forget to rate and subscribe now.